Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome to a Saturday morning edition of the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio and your local CBS Sports Radio affiliate or Sirius XM channel 206, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227 is the number if you want to jump on board with us, or you can give me a follow, shoot me a tweet on the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. James Graceffo and Brian Jack McKeon on the other side of the glass. And we're coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios, National Mortgage Lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and make sure you always mortgage confidently. Coming up in about an hour and 40 minutes, we'll talk to the Patriots starting center, a team captain in David Andrews. The Pats get a big victory last weekend in the game of the week on Sunday Night Football up against the Kansas City Chiefs, and what was a thriller, 43-40, a seesaw game. Patriots dominate early, then Kansas City comes back, and then at the end, Brady hits Gronkowski. Gostkowski makes the game-winning field goal, and the Patriots escape with a three-point victory. As I did tell you, that game was going to come down to a field goal. Didn't know who was going to win it, but told you it would come down to a field goal. That's why we took Kansas City plus the 3.5 from last week's picks, which, by the way, last week, 3-0 in the NFL pick, so we don't usually pick those games right, but when you do, I will pat myself on the back and take my victory lap with that. So no doubt about it, happy about that, and hopefully we get some good picks coming up later with college football and then also the NFL as well. Also joining us, as the Pats will play the Bears this week, so we'll talk to David Andrews about that. Also joining us at 4:40 a.m. Eastern, 1:40 a.m. Pacific, the Cowboys and the Redskins play this weekend on Sunday, so we'll talk to a Redskins tight end, a man that has been around the league for a long time with San Francisco, then won a Super Bowl with the Denver Broncos, now is with the Redskins in his third year for his hometown team. Vernon Davis will join us, so we'll talk to Vernon Davis as the Redskins take care of the Panthers, and I'm still trying to figure out what the Redskins are this year. They keep on vacillating, good team, bad team, good team, bad team. But they try to get another win, and they'll have Dallas coming to town this upcoming weekend. So a lot to do, but where we do start, of course, I'm also sprinkling some NBA as well, but we do start with the baseball playoffs. ALCS already in the books. The Boston Red Sox, in impressive fashion, they take care of the Houston Astros, and the Red Sox are going back to the World Series. Their fourth World Series appearance since 2004. Took 86 years for them to break the curse and win a World Series, and they win in 2004, 2007, 2013, and now have a chance to do so to cap off what was a 108 regular season win year for the Boston Red Sox. So just look at the dominance there, and it hasn't been with the same manager. It's been four different managers throughout the time, or three different managers with Tito and what they were able to do 2004, 2007, then 2013, and then we have with 2018 now with Alex Cora. So you had three different managers along the way. So all over the board there, some different names. Obviously, or in the earlier years, you had a Johnny Damon, you had Manny Ramirez, you had Pedro, you had Curt Schilling. Now it's a completely different look with what they've been able to do. And no more Big Poppy, obviously, as well as Big Poppy was such a big name for them for so many years. But now this is a Red Sox team that all starts with the outfield. And their outfield with the Killer Bees and Benintendi and Betts and also Jackie Bradley Jr., and he didn't have the best regular season, but what he's done in the postseason this year has been remarkable. It's been phenomenal with what he was able to do, and he was the ALCS MVP. But if you look at what impresses me the most with Boston, it's really what they've been able to do on the road in this postseason. You're going up against 100-plus win teams in the Yankees and the Houston Astros, and what the Red Sox were able to do against the Yankees and then the Astros on the road to be 5-0 against two really great teams It's just stupid good with how good it is. And the Red Sox on those five road games, games 3 and 4 at Yankee Stadium, and then games 3, 4, 5 up against the Astros in Houston at Minute Maid Park, they outscored both those teams by 40 to 13. I thought taking two games at Yankee Stadium was impressive. When you're tied at 1-1 with the Astros, the defending champs, and you win games 3, 4, and 5, that just tops that. And the difference of this series was the sixth inning and on. Because from the sixth inning and on, in all these games, the Red Sox outscored the Astros 15-7. And give credit to David Price, too. How about David Price? No one could have predicted that David Price would have outpitched Justin Verlander the other night. But David Price, with his putrid postseason record as a starting pitcher, was able to do that, and Boston gets a bunch of big hits, and Benintendi makes the great catch at the end, and the Red Sox go on to take, which was a game 5, and they take the series in 5 games. So just crazy, and 2 great catches by Benintendi. At the end of game 4, obviously, which was a just crazy, crazy game, but then game 5, I didn't know if he was going to get that one down, but he's able to get it. Obviously, the one in game 4 was a whole lot bigger, so there you go. Boston going back to the World Series. Now, let's get to the series that's still ongoing in the NLCS. And sports fans, these are the best 2 words that you get to hear. Game 7. And we will have a Game 7 later tonight, as last night, the Milwaukee Brewers forced a Game 7, where this has been a series that has just been so thrilling to watch. Brewers hold on in Game 1. Turner wins it in Game 2. The Brewers dominate Game 3. The Dodgers look dead. They're complaining about their home crowd. But then the Dodgers go on to win games 4 and 5 in LA, as game 4 was just another great game in extra innings. Kershaw dominates game 5, and it goes back to Milwaukee last night. And in the first inning, when David Fries, the first batter of the game, who is Mr. Game 6, hits a home run, first batter in, if you're a Milwaukee fan, you're probably thinking, uh-oh, I know it's only 1-0, but this is an elimination game. And that's not a great start. Except this is a Milwaukee team that there's a reason what they have done this year in the regular season. They bounce back in that first inning, all with 2 outs. Aguilar with the double, 2 RBIs, gets the lead back. Moustakas with the double to make it 3-1. And then Kratz gets a single to make it 4-1, all with 2 outs. And that was such a major turning point in the game, not only to get the lead, but then to expand on it further and to exit that first inning up 4-1. You then eventually knew that it was going to go over to the Brewers' bullpen. You would have thought that you would have seen Hader, but you did not get that. You got Knable, who went an inning and 2/3, only 25 pitches, 0 hits. And I know all hands are on deck for a Game 7, but to get Knable to get you 5 outs and only use 25 pitches works in their favor very much for the Milwaukee Brewers. And Jeffers, he also no hits the Dodgers in an inning. 13 pitches. And then how about the rookie Burns? No hits in 2 innings. Now they expanded the lead, but for a rookie at 23, that's a heck of a job. And the Brewers don't use Hader. And this is why I love this sport, baseball. Because you see the reaction from 2 nights ago, or a few nights ago, how Game 5 started, where Craig Counsell takes out Wade Miley and after 1 batter, and then he elects to use him in Game 6. As whatever he was doing is still, to me, just as someone that watches the game, and I know you could put together whatever numbers or whatever you want to put behind it, or whatever the strategy was, that was bizarre to me. It was extremely bizarre. It's still tough to comprehend. And he was trying to get Roberts off his game, but Roberts put lefties in the lineup anyway, 2 lefties in the lineup anyway. It was a different lineup for them than what it was game 2. But regardless, Counsell is getting ripped for how he handled game 5. And they lose the game, and what he was doing with Miley, people weren't liking it. I was talking to Josh Towers, a former MLB big league pitcher, and he was absolutely just ripping Counsell to shreds. Said it was one of the stupidest things he's ever seen. Just completely ripping Counsell. But then Counsell in game 6, not only you win the game, but you manage your bullpen perfectly, where you don't have to use Hader. And now that's such a big key going into this game 7 later tonight, where you could have Hader, if he pitches well, for 9 outs. You could have him for 3 innings. And the bullpens is what's going to decide this game 7. I really do believe that. They have Chacin for the Brewers and then Walker Buehler for the Dodgers. That's the pitching matchup, and we'll see how far those two do go. But the bullpens, you know what we're all going to be thinking? When will the Brewers get Hayterin? And when will the Dodgers get Kershaw in? And that's what this game is probably going to come down to. The dominance of those two pitchers coming out of the pen, who's on their game the most, and on the other side, who could find a way to push a run across the board up against Kershaw and then Hayter. That's what that game on paper comes down to. Now, I picked the Brewers before the series started, so I will stick with them. I don't have a great feel on this game either way. It's a game seven. It could be a blowout. It could be a close game. From a sports fan and from a talk show host perspective, I hope it's going to be a close game. I hope, you know, let's run it 13, 14 innings. Why don't we? Just let's not have the start time, the end time actually be 3 a.m. Because some of these games, I'm loving the postseason, and sometimes I don't have to go to work the next day, but I could sympathize for the fan that when you have a classic extra inning game that what you had in Los Angeles a few nights ago, it's ended at 2 a.m. If you're on the West Coast, that's fine, but if you're on the East Coast, that's ridiculous. And I don't know what the MLB could do to change it, but when you're trying to get younger fans involved, yeah, it's a pain in the you-know-what, and those younger fans are missing it. Or the other night in that game four with the Red Sox and the Astros. That was crazy. Reddick making the big catch, then Benintendi making the big catch. But a lot of fans probably are missing out on it because the game just ended so late. So, hey, in a game seven tomorrow or later tonight, it's a Saturday night. I don't care how long that game goes. I don't. But I really do believe it's going to come down to the bullpens. And right now, I just have to lean towards Milwaukee. I don't have a great feel on it, but I would lean towards Milwaukee. And that's a team that's been disrespected a lot throughout the year, and they're just a really good baseball team. And they had the best record in the NL when you did enter the postseason. So I would lean towards Milwaukee, but it's so tough, too. If you get Kershaw out of the pen and Kershaw's on, it's tough to pick against the Dodgers. That's why it's so fascinating to me, the matchup with Hayter and Kershaw. So a lot on the table with the MLB, 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. That's CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, and it's brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Here's the two questions I'll ask you. Who are you going with the Brewers and Dodgers in Game 7 later tonight? And also, what team would you rather see face the Red Sox in the World Series? What team do you think has the best chance, Brewers, Dodgers, and taking down the Red Sox, who just look unstoppable right now with what they were able to do and how quickly they were able to do it up against Houston in their house, and then also the series prior to that up against the Yankees in the Bronx as well. 855-212-4CBS. David Andrews, of course, will join us at 3:40 a.m. Eastern, and then at 4:40 a.m. Eastern, we will talk to Vernon Davis, but we talk to you next. On the phone lines, it's the Zach Gelb Show, off and running on a Saturday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
All right, let's rock the phones. Coming up in an hour, David Andrews will join us in 2 hours. Vernon Davis will join us, but we got some more time to talk baseball. Until then, also squeeze in some NBA as well. Let's go out to Arkansas, though. We welcome Bobby to the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Bobby?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. Go ahead.
To answer your question, game seven, I think I'm taking the Brewers. Just too much bullpen, and the Dodgers, I don't think their bats are consistent enough to win it. And that same thing with the World Series, the Brewers just pose a different threat compared to the Dodgers. The Dodgers do have bigger bats, but when it comes to consistency, I just don't think the Dodgers could do it against the Red Sox, especially with their bullpen.
And you think the Brewers could do it up against the Red Sox is what you're saying?
I think the Brewers have a better chance with the consistency with their bats and their bullpen.
I think the bullpen is the big thing. The bullpen, to me, I mean, that could win you a series with Knebel, Jeffers, and also Hayter.
Yeah.
I wouldn't pick against the Red Sox just because what the Red Sox did the first two rounds is just, it's remarkable to me, but I would have to go. The bullpen is what is the real enticing option with the Brewers.
Right.
But just with the Dodgers, their experience, they were there last year. This is a team that they add Machado, where if he's not spiking guys at first base, that's the biggest problem for them. But really, this is either one of these teams that wins. I'm not saying there's no chance they can, but I don't feel great picking either of these teams. But I would just go with the Dodgers just because there, to me, is a team that's been there. They've done it before, at least getting to the World Series. And if you get to the World Series twice in a row, hey, yeah, you could lose both of them. There's no doubt about it, but maybe this one would go your way.
No, that's true. But then again, the Brewers also have Kane and Moustakas who've been there.
Yelich, true, good point. He's with the Royals.
He's a good batter, too. Braun's been in the league for a long time. Shope's been there, too. Not in the World Series, but he's been in playoffs. So it's not like the Brewers are just newbies that are going into it. You know what I mean?
No, totally fair. This game coming up later tonight, like you were saying, and if you look at this matchup, it's a toss-up. It's a coin flip. It's game seven. We know that. But I lean towards the Brewers because of what happened the night before where what they got out of the bullpen, and they still have Hader, and Hader did not go in the game. Right. So he could go for three innings.
And Hader is, that guy's nasty. Everyone knows he's nasty. He's unhittable pretty much. Yeah, they did hit him in, game four or five? But it was... He's one of these pitchers that, he just does not get hit very often. This Brewers bullpen reminds me of that Royals bullpen that made it to the World Series.
Yeah, with the three studs.
Yes.
That's a good point, Bobby. Appreciate the phone call. So we'll see who wins the game. But the most compelling thing to me going into this game seven is not even the two starters. It's when does Hader get into the game and when does Kershaw get into the game? And how long do they go? And can anyone get to them? And that's what I think will decide this game seven. We go to Chris in Boston. Next up, CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Chris?
Same, Zach. The Red Sox outfield, I think, was not underrated at all. I think it was well spoken for. But I think they're set up quite well for National League ballparks, especially with their speed and their talent. Although that's going to be tested with National League rules being, in the World Series. Also, the Red Sox, I think the more that they play, the less of the crap their pants factor that goes into some of these players like Price, who just pure panic attack on the mound. You can just see it. That and Kimbrell. I'm just hoping that some of these guys just, the big moment.
Settle down a little bit. Yeah, Kimbrell, I would have to think he would bounce back, but, man, he's looked terrible. He's looked nervous on the mound. It is a cause for concern, but just with the way that he's been as a pitcher throughout his career, you have to think eventually, just like with Price, eventually you got to punch through, right?
Right. And Zach, question for you. And there's two different ways of looking at it, but who do you think's better for baseball, the Red Sox versus a big market team like L.A., or is it a smaller market team like Boston and Minnesota? Giving more hope to, towns and...
Yeah, I would always go with the two big markets, with Boston and L.A. I think that for baseball, they would rather see that. But with the Brewers, if you get the Brewers, it's a tremendous story. Because who had the Brewers going to the World Series before the year started? You want to tell me playoffs, I would have listened to it. But to go to the World Series before the year started, no one had the Brewers going to the World Series.
Right. Hey, and Alex Cora... He never took his foot off the gas, constantly on the attack, never waited for things to happen, totally came at people. The Yankees and the Astros were always on
their feet. I can't think of a bad move that Cora's made so far in this postseason. I really can't think of a bad move. What did you say?
I want to go to Vegas with that guy.
Sit down at the blackjack table. He'll give you some winners, no doubt about it. There's no doubt about that. And he seems like he's hitting every single button the right way in Alex Cora. He's done a really remarkable job. You look at what the Yankees did this year. The Yankees are 100 games. If you would have told me before the year the New York Yankees would have 100 games, I would have said, yeah, they win the AL East. Not even close. Red Sox win 108. You just got to tip your cap to someone when they're able to do that. And to the caller's first point about the outfield. Everyone knew who Betts was. And if you didn't know who Benintendi was going into this series, shame on you. But now you know who Benintendi is. And Jackie Bradley Jr., not a good hitter in the regular season, but big hit in game two with the three RBIs and had the grand slam as well. This guy's just been an RBI machine in the postseason now. So the Killer Bees have been phenomenal. But then, yes, also another good point when you had the whole DH thing. How will you play that one out? And who's going to be sitting? Because you're not sitting Martinez. We know that. So where in your nine guys on the field, who's going to be the guy that's going to be odd man out of what you currently do? But even that infield, if you look at that infield, there's minus Bogarts, there's no locks to play every day. You go Devers, you could go Nunez at third, and Devers had a great game five, had the home run. At second base, you could go Kinsler, you go Holt. First base, Pierce has been good. You could also go Moreland, who got the start the other night, but Pierce's glove has been just phenomenal. So if you look at the Red Sox and the Yankees going into this year, you would have thought the Yankees would have been the better team. But it's been the Red Sox who have been the better team for the entire way. It hasn't even been close. Let's go to David in South Carolina next up, CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, what's going on, Zach?
Hey, what's up, David? Do well.
Hey, I think that the Brewers would give them a better match. No, I think the Dodgers would give them a better match, but I'm going for the Brewers because, you know, this guy Manny Machado and the right fielder Puig, they just crazy. And this guy's a really dirty player. You know, I just think that the Dodgers, you know, they're too good of a franchise. And, you know, a historical franchise to have this type of play, and it just brings them down. So the Dodgers probably will have a better chance against Boston, but I'm going for the Brewers. I'm a National League fan. I'm a Mets fan, too.
And God bless you. I feel your pain being a Mets fan as well.
Wait a minute, Zach. But how about that game three where the Yankees had a chance to, you know, take them? Was that a historic win, 16-1? Or has there been a lopsided win like that in the playoffs from before in their own backyard? I don't know. Has there been a beatdown like that?
Oh, the big beatdown, and I know it was a different role of reversal, but I remember that 2004 ALCS, it was different because the Yankees just pounded the Red Sox, and then that eventually ignited the comeback with Big Poppy in games 4 and 5, and then eventually you have Johnny Damon hitting two home runs in game 7, but I have to go look, and at the top of my head, I can't give you an answer. I have to go and look it up. But, yeah, that game three was a statement, especially with the Yankees winning game two, when they could have won game one, and they didn't. But they win game two, Yankee fans saying, all right, this is going to go back to Boston. Game three, Red Sox come out with the statement. They win, and they make it even more impressive the following night when they find a way to win game four as well and take care of that series in four. But and that's the crazy thing with the Red Sox right now. And I gave the statistic in the open. 5-0 on the road in the postseason. And they outscored at New York and at Houston 40-13. That just shows you everything that you need to know about this Red Sox team. That's their year. Because if I would have told you before the series, both these series, that the Red Sox would have won both games in New York and all three in Houston, let's not kid ourselves. It seemed like the entire nation, including myself, was taking the Houston Astros to win this series. And they go into Houston in a 1-1 series, and they take all three and end the series in Houston? And I get it. Hey, Altuve banged up. But with that Houston team, yeah, I never would have predicted this. If you had told me Boston would have won the series beforehand, I wouldn't have called you crazy. The team won 108 games. But to go win all three in Houston, that's crazy. But that's what this Red Sox team has been this year. Crazy, crazy, crazy good. Let me just touch on the back end of the caller's point about Machado. I didn't like what Machado did to Aguilar. I didn't. But the thing that annoys me the most with Machado in this series, and this is a guy that's on the cusp of getting a lucrative contract and still will get a lucrative contract. But him basically just saying, yeah, I don't hustle, is a terrible look. It's a terrible look. And you see some of these big markets that he's going to go to in the offseason, like a market like Philadelphia. hey, when the guy plays well, you tolerate him. The team's winning, you tolerate it. But when they're losing, and this guy has a bad hustle play or lack of hustle play, he's going to hear it. Now, you still take him because the talent is just ridiculous, but he has not done himself too many favors in terms of popularity in this postseason for Manny Machado. Never had an issue with him going into this year. Never had an issue with him in his career, really, for me. As a Met fan, I'd take him my team in a second, hustle or not, but the hustle comment was just like, ooh, ugly. And then what he did at first base, also ugly as well. All right, 855-212-4CBS. It's the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. We'll put the baseball talk on the back burner for just a little bit. When we come back, the NBA season is underway. We'll get into some storylines entering this NBA season. Also, we'll touch on the new G League rules. We're still waiting for more details, but we'll touch on that story as well. Hour number one in the books. Hour number two coming up next. It's the Zach Gelb Show right here, CBS Sports Radio and Sirius XM, Channel 206.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Hour number two, it's the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. The NBA season is underway, and it got me thinking about some big storylines entering this season. Now, I know if you're listening in your car right now or on Sirius or on the app or whatever, you may be saying, Zach, big storylines with the NBA this year? Come on. We all know what the story is going to be. The Golden State Warriors are going to win the championship again. They won it last year. They won it the year before that. They have KD. They have Steph. They have Klay. They have Draymond. And, oh, yeah, by the way, even though he's hurt right now, they added Boogie Cousins, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins in the offseason. Come on. Why are you going to hype up the NBA going into this year? And I'll tell you why. Even though I don't have a great interest for it early on right now, just because you got football fully underway with the NFL and college, you also got the MLB postseason. Yeah, no doubt about it. The NBA and hockey to me take a little bit of a seat on the back burner right now. They do, but with the NBA, the offseason always dominates. And there was a lot of juicy storylines this offseason that, yes, it does make you raise a few, you know, makes you raise both your eyebrows and saying, okay, even though you think the Warriors are going to win the championship this year, there's still some storylines. And that was proved true last year. Everyone could talk about, and I hammered this for years, like, oh, we need to see a little bit different change and all this and that and this and that, and the product's boring. It's so predictable. It's LeBron versus whoever the Warriors have. But you know what? Last year's regular season was a good regular season. So, yes, the Warriors will win the championship this year, barring something crazy. But there's still a way for the NBA to have a good season. There is. Because you could still have some really good storylines entering the postseason or some good storylines that develop throughout the regular season. So let's look at some of those storylines right now. Let's start with the aforementioned Golden State Warriors, who, by the way, won last night on a tip-in. And it wasn't Steph, it wasn't Klay, it wasn't KD. It was remarkable with the tip-in, with that happening. Who was the player that had the tip-in? You could say it on the air. Go ahead, Graceffa.
Jonas Jerebko.
Thank you. We were watching the newsroom. And we just go, oh, my goodness gracious. It was crazy. A tip-in, and it wasn't one of the big players of the Golden State Warriors. Not the way that you would have designed it up for it to happen. But let's start with the Golden State Warriors. You just wonder when that team turns it up. Is it going to be a year where they go for 70-something wins, or is it going to be one of those years where they're okay with getting 62, 63, 64, 65? You just wonder when they turn it up and when they go all out for it. And also you have KD with the pending free agency. You already got some news going in on that with his brother and everything and all that craziness and the speculation that this could be his last year with the Golden State Warriors, which I'll believe it when I see it. I'm not going to start to speculate on that, but it is something that you look at, and we all know how much the NBA offseason does dominate. So you can never get too much NBA offseason talk, even this time of the year. The next one, LeBron in L.A. Now, LeBron in L.A., what's intriguing to me is I don't think that's a team with the roster they have right now that wins LeBron a championship. I don't. And I think there was better alternatives than L.A. to go to for LeBron James if he wanted to win another championship as soon as possible. But you have LeBron with a lot of younger players right now, Ingram, Ball, Kuzma, Hart, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You just want to see that dynamic does gel throughout the year. Now, in the West, the two teams that are clearly better right off the top of your head, the Golden State Warriors and the Houston Rockets. But where do the LA Lakers fall in that pecking order in the Western Conference with now adding LeBron James? And as an East Coast fan, and there'll be plenty of LeBron James games that are going to be on that will be at a good time, but it kind of hit me the other night when you're seeing a tip off at 10:30, usually used to seeing LeBron with the Cavs or the Heat in a primetime game being at 8 p.m. tip off. What? Now when he's out in L.A., there's going to have to maybe stay up and watch a few of those 10:30. And the way that he threw that dunk down on the road to open things up, It was pretty neat to see as well. But LeBron obviously going to dominate the sport and going to dominate the storylines and how that situation with L.A. does play out, especially if LeVar Ball opens up his big mouth and starts talking as well. Spurs, different Spurs team. We know Duncan's been retired, but no more Tony Parker, no more Manu Ginobili, and now Kawhi Leonard's no longer there. So how will the Spurs look this year? Can they still be a playoff team? And how much longer is Greg Popovich going to be coaching in the NBA? We go to the East. The East, to me, it's a three-team race. And the two teams that I think are the most likely to go to the Eastern Conference Final are the Raptors and the Boston Celtics, with Boston being the favorite. Now, the Sixers are that third team. And the Sixers have Embiid. The Sixers have Simmons, where they really need Markelle Fultz to step up. And I don't know where he's going to be this year, Markelle Fultz. I know he made a three-pointer the other night, so congratulations. Good for him. Yeah, Markelle made a three-pointer. He's the first pick in the draft, and you could have had Tatum, and you traded up to go get Markelle Fultz, and you gave the Boston Celtics a pick, and also they got Jason Tatum. So Markelle Fultz has to be a little bit better than just one three-pointer. But I'm wishing for the best for him. He seems like a really good kid from my short interactions with him, but you got to produce. And if you don't produce, we know that's going to be an ugly situation. So they really need him to produce. And Embiid and Simmons are as good as they come. They're just two young, transcendent players. But I just think Boston and the Raptors are a more complete team. They are. Boston, with what they were able to do last year without Gordon Hayward and without Kyrie Irving, now you get those two back with Scary Terry, with Brown, with Tatum, with Horford. You have Stevens as the coach. That's a scary team, a very scary team in a good way. And the Raptors, you add Kawhi, you add a winner. Can they get over the hump now in the postseason? No LeBron James there anymore. So if you're a Raptors fan, you're jumping up and down like a fat kid in a candy store. You don't have to see LeBron James anymore. So that's the Eastern Conference to me, Boston Raptors and the Sixers. And what other team could maybe emerge and be presented as a threat? You go with the Bucks, with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Who's the other team that you go with in the East? Going back to the Western Conference, Jimmy Butler. With this Minnesota Timberwolves situation. Now, Jimmy Butler, last night, he was dominant up against the Cavs. The LeBron-less Cavs, who were 0-2 to start off the year. Timberwolves 131, and Cavaliers 123. Here's what Jimmy Butler did. 10-12 from the field, 33 points, 7 rebounds for Jimmy Butler. 12-12 from the charity stripe. How does that Jimmy Butler situation play out? Is he going to get traded? I know he wants out. Do they trade him or do they keep him there the entire year along with Karl Anthony Towns, Wiggins, and Coach Thibs? So we'll be interesting there. I'll ask the Rockets. The Rockets are a team that intrigued me too. That's another storyline entering this year with the Houston Rockets. Can Houston take down Golden State? Because that's the real challenger for Golden State. I don't think they will. But Houston forced a game 7 last year. We know Paul got hurt. They add Carmelo Anthony. I'm not a huge fan of Carmelo Anthony. Not his entire career, but where he's at right now in this stage of his career. So if you look at Houston, can they get the job done this time around? Also, we talked about the Cavs earlier. What would the Cavs look like without LeBron James? I don't think it's going to be pretty. They do have Colin Sexton, so you want to see what he's able to do this year. You have Love still there. I'm not a big fan of Tristan Thompson. I'm just not. You have Hood and George Hill, but And that's a team that thinks it's going to be bad. And obviously they're going to be bad because they don't longer have LeBron James. And the other storyline that I look at, two teams that surprised me last year. The Jazz with Donovan Mitchell and his spectacular rookie season. And then also the Indiana Pacers, who were a very good story last year and challenged the Cavs in the postseason with LeBron. What do the Jazz and the Pacers look like this year? So what's your biggest storyline for the NBA entering this year? What's the one that gets you excited the most? 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. And are you excited for this NBA season, knowing that the Warriors most likely are going to win their third championship in a row? And the way for me that you get excited is you just have some good storylines in the regular season. I think you have potential to have good storylines. And then if you give me a series in the postseason where Golden State gets challenged like last year, you could still have a successful product even though that you knew what the result would be from the start to the finish. Now, one more point I want to squeeze in before the break. It's this new G League rule that there's still a lot that we need to know. But from ESPN, in the summer 2019, the G League will offer select contracts worth $125,000 to elite prospects who are at least 18 years old but not eligible for the NBA draft. So right now, currently, you have to be 19 or older to enter the NBA. So this would provide another option for someone that doesn't want to go to college. I don't hate it. I like it. I like when you give a young kid more possibilities in life and more choices. Now, I was reading something from Woj yesterday that the NBA, they will not change the draft age prior to 2022. And they've been negotiating to get it back to 18. I'd be fine with it being at 18. Life is about making decisions. And if you think you're good enough to go from high school to the NBA straight, then you should be able to do so. However, with this new alternative, I wonder what the impact is going to be. How do you determine the top players? What do you cap it at? How do you determine what team they go on? And also, how much of a benefit would it be to the player? Because if you go to college, and I get it, you're only there for a semester, and some kids don't want to take classes, even though they're pretty easy classes. If you're a college athlete and you're only there for a semester, they're not going to make you take earth science, or they're not going to make you take chemistry, or like whatever. It's not going to be crazy, these classes. But you wonder how much more of a benefit it is to go right to the G League, where, as Woj was pointing out, it's not as glamorous as people think. And I think the average G League age is like 25. And what happens if a kid that's 18 goes into a league playing with 25-year-olds right away and doesn't play well? How does that affect his draft stock? That's something also to think about. Or would you rather just be better suited going to college and just playing that semester? And even if your team stinks, like we've seen with LSU and Ben Simmons, you could still be a number one draft pick. Or Markelle Fultz with Washington, you could still be a number one draft pick. So it's just something to think about. How much more does it help the player? Well, it can help the player because one big thing, hey, you make $125K, which, hey, with the way college basketball works, you could probably make that too now under the table and everything, the way that's worked for all those years. But it also allows you to get the most out of your individual self in terms of marketing, in terms of endorsement deals and all that that you can't get in college. So I wonder what path we're going to see. Will we see still the top players still go to college for a year? Will they go to the G League? Or maybe they do something else and they get $125K in the G League. Maybe they do something else. And that's maybe if you want to mix in the Bosa stuff with Ohio State, where now he's leaving Ohio State, Bosa, and just going to get ready for the draft. Maybe it'd be better of a benefit for the kid to just not go to the G League where it could hurt his draft stock, not play college, and just go train for a full year. But I think you have to be a real elite talent to do that, but that's what this G League thing is offering up to. So I'm fine with the G League and what they're doing, offering $125,000 to the elite players, but I think there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered, and I'm very curious to see what those answers are, and I'm wondering how many of the players end up taking this route. And they take this route, they take this alternative, and they go this direction. I think it's going to be very interesting. Now, in terms of college basketball, I don't think it kills the college basketball product. I don't. Because you could still have kids that go there for 3-4 years that aren't going to make the NBA and still have great college basketball when we all watch March Madness, but you do also lose the appeal of having like a Karl Anthony Towns or an Anthony Davis or a Ben Simmons in your sport, which is still good for the sport. So what are your thoughts on this new G League rule? And also, what gets you the most excited for this NBA season? Are you even excited for it, knowing that the Warriors are probably going to win another championship once again? We'll get to your phone calls next. Also, David Andrews will join us in about 20 minutes from
now. You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
And CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, is brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Talking some hoops right now on CBS Sports Radio. We go out to L.A. and we talk to Mike next up on the Zach Gelb Show. What's happening, Mike?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Nothing much. Go ahead.
Talking my Lakers, I think it's going to be a good season. I see them possibly in the top four seed. It all dependent. Obviously, we know we're going to get LeBron. I think the X factor is going to be Ingram. He's going to be relied upon to be that sidekick that LeBron is going to rely on. And he's got the tools and settings, and we've seen it, but it's a matter if he can keep that up for a season. And obviously, I think Kuzma is going to be the next factor. And then you got Ball, Lonzo. He's got to step his game up. If not, then Luke Walton is not going to be hesitant to go to Rondo, who's proven he can still play at a high level when needed upon. So those are the main factors. Like I said, I could see him right around 50, if not a little less, but I think Houston – maybe is going to end up number one. I think Golden State probably second. And then I think Utah, man, look for Utah. I think they're going to be the X factor who nobody wants to play, including Golden State, who, you know, they have a lot of problems with. But as far as your other point, I think it's going to be exciting, fun season. I think a lot of new, brand new teams are going to break out. Now, I don't agree with you. I don't think Golden State's going to win this year.
Whoa, you don't think Golden State's winning the championship this year? So who do you think?
As much as I hate to say it, I think Boston's going to win it this year. I'll tell you why, because I think they're going to get home court. And you saw last year, if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, Golden State doesn't get past them. I think they're just going to be gassed in the end. This is going to be their fourth straight run to the end. And you've seen all great teams from the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe to the Spurs and LeBron.
Yeah, but how do you beat them? How do you beat them?
Here's how you beat them.
Go ahead.
You have to have the defense.
The Boston Celtics have, and also scoring depth, which Boston has.
Yes. And the home court. I think those are the main keys that you have to have, and Golden State hasn't had to have, because in the finals they've always had home court. So, and you've seen Boston, and nobody plays them tougher than them. So I think Brad Stevens is going to get them over the hump, and they have the depth, like you said, the depth of coaching, and the number one important thing is defense, where they can slow down Golden State and beat them up and get them into a dog match. And Golden State doesn't like to. They like to play that up-tempo style. So that's why I see the Celtics winning this season. I just think Golden State comes up short. So that's
you're going out on a limb there, because everyone's going to pick Golden State, and I'm not going to be the person to pick against Golden State. I'm just not going to do it. And I think they will get the one seed this year. I know they didn't have it last year, but I think they will make that a little bit of a point of emphasis. But even if they don't, come on. No one in the West is beating them. And as for the Lakers, as he mentions the Lakers, the two things I'm really curious with the Lakers, when, you know, just think about a little bit more, how the young players, A, mesh with LeBron, and also if LeBron is in the final seconds of a game and elects to pass up the shot, which he's done before, we've seen him make a few big shots, but when he passes up the shot, does a Ball knock it down? Does a Kuzma knock down the shot? Does a Ingram knock down a shot? You just want to see how those younger players now, and we know they've played on big stages before, but with every game being a bigger stage when you have LeBron James, how that does play out as well in this first year. Trotsky in Georgia, next up, CBS Sports Radio. T, what's going on in the truck?
Hey, Zach, how you doing, brother?
Doing great. Go ahead, my man.
Hey, Zach, my storyline this year, since LeBron is on the Western Conference, I'm looking to see not exactly what team, but what star takes a hold of the Eastern Conference this year. You know, being that, you know, you got Kyrie, Kawhi, and to tell you the truth, Zach, my opinion, I think this should be a big year for the Greek Freak. In the playoffs, it's time for the Greek Freak to put up a shut up.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what will happen. Now, Milwaukee, they were a team at the end of last year that was fading a little bit. You know, at the end of the regular season, I remember seeing them play in Philadelphia right before the end. But really, with the Eastern Conference, they didn't have a real inspiring effort in Philadelphia. But really, in the Eastern Conference, it comes down to three teams, in my opinion. It's the Celtics, it's the Raptors, and then it's the Sixers. And if you're going to ask me who's going to win it, I got to go Boston right now. Because like we were talking about with the last caller, their scoring depth, their coach, and this is a team that took LeBron to a game seven last year, and they were without Gordon Hayward. They were without Kyrie Irving. Now they get those two players back. We get to see how they perform, dealing with the health and all that. But I would still have to go with Boston. But the player that has the most to prove is Kawhi. Kawhi wanted out of San Antonio. Now you go to the Raptors, a team that has been close before, and you could take that team over the hump. You can. So let's see what this Raptors team is and what Kawhi is. And we all know how great Kawhi Leonard is. Two-time Defensive Player of the Year, NBA Finals MVP. But can he get that magic to work once again? And can he get it to work in Toronto? And if he is, does he leave Toronto? That's something to look at. But getting back to Milwaukee, what the caller did say, Wachowski said, and I know they took Boston to a game seven last year. Yes. People thought that, and I picked Boston in that series to go up against Philly the next round. But people thought Milwaukee could have won that series with what Boston was missing. So it's a nice year to see what Milwaukee can do. But they're not right on my radar at first because we mentioned the three teams that we mentioned, the aforementioned teams with the Toronto Raptors, with the Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics in the East. I'll take one more before the break. Let's go out to Chicago, the Windy City. We talked to Dean next up, CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Dean?
Just a couple of comments on this G League basketball thing.
Yeah.
You know, it seems
I'm just
like
going to say you don't seem too thrilled about it, by the way, that you presented it.
No, I'm not. I'm very skeptical for one main reason. We encourage kids to get an education. Now it seems like we're discouraging them from going to college.
Wait, but here's the thing, Dean. This is for the elite kids. Most elite kids are only spending a semester at college.
I understand that. But my other side of this is that how many times do we see and have we seen athletes 35, 40 years old, made big money, and they're broke? And it seems like if they got some kind of, you know, formal training, education, something, they might be a little more responsible with their money, and also the fact that they may not get an education in college. We know that. But they at least get a piece of paper that says they went there. And I'm thinking later on in life, when the big spotlight is off of them, you know, it gives them a way to earn a decent living so that, you know, they're not going to live up to the standard when they were making, you know, $10 million a year, but at least they can take care of themselves. So,
well, Dina, I got to let you run because I'm up against it, but I do appreciate the phone call. I don't think whatever they learn in that semester is going to affect them. And if you're making $125,000 in 1 year in the G League, you have enough money to hire a financial advisor. You could do that. It's also important that you understand how to manage your money and all that. And I'm not saying that going to college isn't important because it is, but for the elite talent, I don't think that semester makes a difference or not. I don't in terms of how your life is going to play on out.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So we made our picks on Michigan State, Michigan, Auburn, Ole Miss, and Oregon, and Washington State. Let's just look at some other storylines. Not as juicy as you would expect for a college football week. This happens from time to time, but you never know what could happen and what moves could happen inside the top 25. And last week, it was absolutely crazy. It was four teams going down in the top 10. And this is a college football season that you never know how it's going to play out. But Alabama is still the team to me that I don't see how I wouldn't pick them to go down, put it that way. And I don't know who is going to take them down this upcoming season. Not impossible, but the way that it goes right now, extremely, extremely tough. So here's your new look top 10. With last week, you have four teams go down, out of the four teams that went down in the top 10, three went out of the top 10. One stayed in, that, of course, was Georgia. Penn State did, of course, fall out. Washington did fall out. And West Virginia did fall out. Washington's now 13. Excuse me, West Virginia's now 13. Washington's now 15. And Penn State goes down to 18. So your new top 10, Alabama 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, Notre Dame 4, LSU 5, Michigan 6, Texas 7, Georgia 8, Oklahoma 9, and UCF 10. So the right 10 teams are in the top 10. If you want to complain about the order, you could do that. I'm sure if you're a UCF fan, you're going to be saying, well, we were 10 last week. We should have went up. But you know that you're not going to get the respect there. Oklahoma at 9, I think, is right. Georgia falling to 8. I don't know if there's 7 other teams better than Georgia in college football, but finally had a task last week, a tough task, and LSU just spanked you at LSU. Texas going up to 7. The way the season started off for Texas, losing to Maryland, no one would have seen that one coming. Michigan going to 6. If you would have told me after Notre Dame, Michigan would be 6, I would have said probably not. LSU at 5. How about LSU? They lose to, you know, they lose a game to Florida in the swamp after already having impressive wins against Miami and Auburn. They lose to Florida 27-19. And then they bounce back, and not only bounce back, they just roll over Georgia. They win the game by 20 points. Notre Dame's at 4. Here's the thing with Notre Dame. Whether you believe in Notre Dame or not, they're 7-0. If Notre Dame runs the table, they're going to get into the college football playoff, whether you like that or not. And their schedule is only 5 games remaining. And they just survived Pitt last week at 19-14. Navy, Northwestern, Florida State, Syracuse, USC. They win those next 5 games. Doesn't matter if they're all by 1 point or if they're all by 20 points. They're going to the college football playoff if they run the table. That's the big if. Clemson, they do play NC State later today. That game, though, is at Clemson. It's a 3-16 matchup. Spread was at like 17.5 points. It's a big number. But you get Clemson at home. I don't know what to make at NC State. I don't. You know, respect to them for being the 16th team in the nation, being 5-0. But are you going to pick against Clemson in that game? Are you? I'm not. And a big test for what would have been for them was West Virginia, NC State, to get a more feel on what they would have been, was canceled earlier this year. So the wins for NC State this year is James Madison, 24-13. They beat Georgia State, the Panthers, 41-7. West Virginia game canceled. They beat Marshall. They beat Virginia. They beat BC. Not playing the best teams there. This is their first big test and their last big test of the year. They have Clemson, because after that they play Syracuse, which, give credit, Dino Babers did a nice job this year. Florida State, Wake Forest, Louisville, UNC, and ECU. So not a killer schedule, but they could send a big statement today if they go into Clemson and find a way to pull off the victory. Now, Mississippi State, LSU. This is the battle of what Mississippi State team's going to show up. It's been tough to get a read on Mississippi State for this year. And then with LSU, you would expect them to keep this thing rolling, right? You lose to Florida, then you bounce back and you get the victory against Georgia. You would anticipate them to keep this thing rolling. Maybe, and I don't expect this when you have a 22nd team in the country coming in. Will any of these LSU players look ahead to what's next on the schedule with Alabama? Just something to ask. I don't think they will, but this is a Mississippi State team. They beat Auburn 23-9. They lose to Florida 13-6. They lose to Kentucky 28-7. I'm still trying to figure out what team on the seesaw for Mississippi State is going to show up. Is it the team more like Florida and Kentucky? Or is the team that took care of Auburn, who is a pretender and was not as good as people thought they were? So let's see how Mississippi State LSU plays out. I would lean towards LSU getting the victory, though. Just because anytime you think LSU is not going to win one this year, they find a way to win one and win one convincingly. And this is a nice little American Athletic Conference matchup. And I'm not just saying this because I went to Temple University. But Cincinnati's undefeated. And you get a Temple team that is starting to surge. Temple, let me ask you this, McKeon. Let's see how good of a gambling guy you are, because you proclaim to be like the best gambling guy there is, and you make all this money and all that stuff. And McKeon shakes his head because he can never play along with the Joker, have any fun. Let's get a little personality, McKeon, here. We're trying to make you a little more entertaining. You understand that, correct?
Sure.
Okay. You didn't like that joke, though. You do think you're pretty good, though, at betting college football.
I think I'm good at betting. I'm not known JJ after dark, but I'm a decent bettor.
Gotcha. Cincinnati at Temple. What do you think the line is on this game? Cincinnati's undefeated there, I think, but like 20th in the country.
I would say Cincinnati is favored by 6.5 points.
Wrong.
Wow.
The Temple Owls.
Are favored?
Are a 3-point favorite.
Why is that, Zach? I have to ask you that. I don't understand.
I don't know. Temple lost to Villanova this year in Buffalo. They've also taken down Maryland. And their other wins are Tulsa, ECU, and Navy.
And it's not like they have some impossible home field advantage that we know of either.
Hey, don't be. It's homecoming. That's a big deal.
The link is great. But
Kyle Medikevich will be in the house.
Oh, okay. So now, then definitely Temple's right. I mean, they should be a 10-point favorite at that point.
You jackass. Cincinnati, yeah, they should be favored. When I saw that line, I said, if I was betting on this one, which I won't be, I would say, yeah, I'd plus the 3 points with Cincinnati.
Favored by what?
I would have thought they would have been a 4-point favorite.
Yeah, that's about right, I'd say.
At first, I just thought I was reading the line wrong. That's what I thought, because the line is three points. You'd think, okay, yeah, Cincinnati. And then I saw Temple, 3-point favorite.
This will be the game you see, and you're like, oh, now I got to throw money on if the line's that great, and then it winds up being a Temple blowout.
Which would be great. Fight for the cherry and the white. I'd be very happy.
Yeah, sure, whatever you said.
I'd be extremely happy. Be jumping up and down if Temple gets the win. Go T for Temple U University. Fight for the cherry and the white. You could tell why I was an announcer then and not someone that was in the pep squad doing that. You don't want to see me throwing people up in the air and saying, let's go Temple. You wouldn't want to see that.
Oh, man, there's another dead girl. Great.
Why'd you have to go there, Grisevo?
You were leading it there, so I just took it there.
Yeah, throw someone up in the air.
Oh, your neck's broken. Oh, no.
I think I'd be able to catch the person with my frame.
You better hope.
I don't think I'd be able to get the cheerleader on the palm of my hand. I don't get how they do that. That's
ridiculous.
Let's
just say you drop her, you got a problem. You know what I'm saying?
It's true.
Yeah.
If broadcasting didn't work out,
I would not be a cheerleader.
You would not. Okay.
No, that would not be the case. I'd be a drunk student in the in the stands going, run the football a bit more.
As opposed to a drunk broadcaster in the presser booth.
If you were drunk, you'd be in a better position to throw somebody up in the air.
I don't think so.
Maybe. You never know. You get hidden talents when you drink.
Would you ever be a cheerleader, Grisevo?
No, look at me.
I would pay money.
You think I want to do that?
Grisevo in one of those skin-tight shirts.
He could join the Jets flight crew.
How many, what school did you go to?
Manhattan.
Manhattan? What's their mascot?
Jaspers.
The Jaspers? That'd be great. You
really think I'm doing that?
No. What's their school color? Green?
Green, white, you know.
Green, white? Grisevo in the green and white? I'll tell you, though, I have a lot of respect, though, for the guys that do that. I'm actually friendly with someone on the Temple
they
Spirit
very
Squad.
Very strong men.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I always wonder, how do you keep the girl's foot in the palm of your hand and lift her above your head? It's ridiculous. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. All right, final one. Alabama versus Tennessee. The big question here is how long does Tua Tagovailoa play for? Will he get into the fourth quarter and then he has the injury and all that? Nick Saban's been downplaying this all week. Oh, yeah, he's practiced. And he would have went into the game. I told you, he would have went into the game last week if we needed him to go into the game. Tua's going to play. Tua's going to dominate. Tua's going to do well. And I don't think Alabama's going to be scared whatsoever or have a bad performance against Tennessee. And even if they do have a bad performance against Tennessee, they should still win the game by 10 points.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.